Welcome, everybody, to episode 23 of the Blue Skies Dronecast, the podcast by UAB Hub. This is a podcast for the UK drone industry, discussing everything from the UK regulations, new drones, and also speaking to you, the people within the drone industry. Presented this week by Tom Patterson, Adam Giorgio, and Matthew Hurst. So welcome along, everyone. This is probably an episode you've all been waiting for, I imagine. We've been waiting to, I think, produce this one as well. And before we sort of roll into the actual subject, you probably already know it, but just a quick hello from Matthew. You all right, Matthew? How's it going? All right?
Yeah, exciting one, this, as you've said, Tom. I think this is long awaited, and I'm looking forward to getting into the depths of the subject at hand.
That's it. Yes. And we can also welcome back Adam as well. He had a little holiday from the podcast last week, but he's back and raring to go. How are you doing, Adam? All right?
Yeah, all good. Ready to talk about this. I feel like we've been waiting 12 months, if not more, for this. And it doesn't disappoint.
No, it's funny, isn't it? It almost feels like it's already been out, actually. And obviously what we're talking about is the Mavic 3, the DJI Mavic 3. We now finally know its name. We finally know exactly what it looks like. And we also know all the specs as well. And I think we were pretty much spot on. I think were we from our kind of sort of knowing about the sort of the speculations and talking about the other bits and pieces, we were fairly spot on, weren't we, I think, with that side of things. So hopefully we can just reinforce the information that we've already spoken about. So obviously there's quite a few bits and pieces to explain and talk about, and obviously I'll be handing it over to Matthew and Adam as we move through the content. But to start with, I think I'm going to make a start with the design. I think they've hit the nail on the head with that, haven't they? Especially when you scroll through the website, it looks very mean and quite assuming, and almost like a little mini Inspire 2, I would say, with that stance now, how they've got it kind of perched up at the top and its legs are kind of sleek and probably slightly longer to take bigger propellers, I imagine, and bits and pieces like that. So I think straight away, it looks like an aircraft that you'd want to buy. So I think they've got a big tick from us on that side of things, which is brilliant. Obviously, again, as Matthew was kind of saying before we hit record, the specs are incredible, but maybe not as incredible as we might have hoped. Matthew, what do you think? Do you think that's sort of semi-true?
Tom, yeah, I don't think I would say it's a disappointment by any means, but I think we sort of, there's nothing fundamentally different about the drone in terms of what it can do. It's a flying machine that carries a camera and it's got very similar features. However, every single one of them is just next level. So I think it is revolutionary. I think it is sort of a future generation which is going to hold its own for a long time. But as you said, as you were starting, it sort of feels like it isn't really anything new, but at the same time, it's a massive leap forward as well.
Yeah, and that's it. And it's basically what the Mavic 2 did, but better, isn't it, really? I think as with most things that get released, it's always like, we understand that they do things very well. What can they do? Just make everything a bit better. So that's what they've done. They've obviously given the camera a massive upgrade, which is great. Obviously, sort of two different types of camera on board now, which is amazing. You don't need two separate aircraft anymore like you did with the previous one. Maybe you can just buy one and it's all included. Obviously, the flight times are extended. That's what people like as well. And obviously, the sort of the connection is there. OcuSync 3, although I think they call it the O3, aren't they, or 03, I think, but it's probably OcuSync, isn't it? So that's their new or upgraded technology for the connection too, which is good. Obviously, two models as well, the standard Mavic 3 and also this Cine version as well that I think we spoke about on a previous episode as well. And I guess the main question that everyone was wanting to know the answer to is the certification. Adam, is it certified?
It's absolutely not. No, it's not a
CQ drone. Did we make a bet about that? I can't remember what we should have remembered that, shouldn't we? I can't remember.
I think,
but let's pretend
did.
We were all right.
I'm fairly certain I said it didn't. It wouldn't be. And yeah. I think the thing is, I know that, you know, a lot of people are getting het up over this. You know, it has to be certified. It has to be certified. It's like, well, actually, I would almost argue with this aircraft, it's not going to make a great deal of difference if it is or isn't. And the reason for that, I would say, is, well, let's just take a quick look at, you know, the reason people want it to be certified. So you can go down to this 5 meters in a low speed mode. Now, really, do you need to go down to 5 meters in a low speed mode using the Cine model of this on film shoots? I don't think so. I don't think it's really much use as a C2 drone for those 5 meters low speed mode, I don't want to be going down to 3 meters per second in a low speed mode for some of the shots you'd want to do with it. So I don't think it's a deal breaker. I know a lot of people really, really want it to be certified, but I don't think it's a big deal breaker that it isn't. Because if you've still got, if you have got a GVC and got your operational authorization, you can fly this thing under PDRA1.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And for the price that we'll probably come on to in a little while, it's a mere drop in the ocean, isn't it, really? For obviously, the GVC and PFCO used to be a lot more, used to be sort of thousands, basically. Now it's down to much cheaper pricing. It's almost like a little add-on, you know, if you want this aircraft, maybe just add on the GVC and you're away. You know, it's not sort of a paperweight, as a lot of people have been saying after 2022. It's far from that, I think, realistically. It's a more professional aircraft. I think that's what they're going for. It's probably aimed at the more professional people who are going to be using this, like you say, Adam, on a film set. And they've probably already got the qualification anyway, so it makes no difference to them, does it? So no, I think that's definitely something to sort of make people aware of. The next kind of subject that we'll talk about then is the availability, I suppose, and the pricing. So, Matthew, can I just go on to DJI's website and get one for tomorrow? How does it work? Are we going to have to wait?
Well, I think they'll be happy enough to take your money, Tom, but I don't think you're going to be receiving it tomorrow. So don't expect the delivery anytime soon. I think in reality, we've seen this many times with previous launches of DJI aircraft. They tend to overpromise and underdeliver in terms of delivery with a new model specifically. And I think that's probably to do with the sort of production line that they put into place. They would be surely developing the production lines that carry this sort of levels of normal stock and normal production that the future market will demand. And to sort of deal with that initial hit of hundreds or perhaps thousands of people wanting to buy them immediately is always going to be a challenge. They couldn't design a long-term production line to handle that. So I think that's probably the reason. At the same time as well, I think they're actually really pushing hard to get this aircraft out in time for Christmas time, perhaps, or whatever the deadline was that they chose. I think they're a little bit on the back foot because I don't think it's fully developed. And we'll talk about this a little bit later in the chat as well. I think it exists. There's obviously proof of that. And they are out there. A couple of people have had them for testing. But in reality, there's still some firmware and so on that they're working on because some of the functionality is not yet available to those who already have them in their hands.
That's exactly what I would say as well, to be honest. It's one of those things where it seems to be the way things go now with technology. It's either like they can supply the equipment straight away, but there's going to be a firmware upgrade in a few months to unlock all the features, or they take your money, like you say, and then they can deliver, hopefully, you know, within the next month before Christmas, I suppose, is the ideal situation. So, yeah, fingers crossed. And obviously, you can pre-order the aircraft and get it from lots of different manufacturers or lots of different, companies as well, so that works quite nicely as well. So pricing, are we sort of surprised it's gone up, hasn't it, I suppose, from the previous alliteration? Adam, what do you think? Are you surprised that it's gone up so much, or
yes and no? I think it's quite a hefty jump, I think, from the Mavic 2. If you look at the Mavic 2 Pro versus the Mavic 3, not the Cine model, if we just talk about the standard model, I'd say that's a quite a hefty jump. I mean, it's so the Mavic 2 Pro was $1,349. I think actually it was $1,299 when it was initially released. And then because of the exchange rate, it actually went up in price to $1,349. Whereas now the Mavic 3's $1,879. So, you know, it's a £500 increase. That's a big jump in inflation for I would argue, actually, if you go look at the Mavic 2 versus the Mavic 3, not the Cine model, the Mavic 3, is it worth the extra £500 if you've already got the Mavic 2 Pro? You know, I think the only major difference for me is, yeah, you have got that zoom functionality. We'll talk about that later on, but I'm not excited about that personally. Again, we'll cover that. But the only big difference is mainly the video capabilities. So the Mavic 2 Pro can do, 4K, 30 frames per second. The Mavic 3 can do, I'm sure we'll come onto this shortly, but I think it can do 120 frames per second. So there are some of those improvements. And yes, it does have a bigger sensor, but is it £500? extra worth. And then, yeah, you know, the Cine model, £4,279. That's to get you that ProRes license effectively and that 1 terabyte storage. Like, oh, is it worth the extra over £2,000? That's, yeah. I can buy, you know, in the background, I've got a GH5 here, you know, with a micro 1/3 sensor. That didn't cost me £4,000 for almost the same capabilities. It's like,
but can it fly?
It can if I put it on something. But put it on another drone, it can. But, you know, it feels, I don't know, it feels a bit overpriced, but I can appreciate that it is a professional aircraft. It's not a toy.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what they're aiming for, like we've mentioned before, especially with the specs. It feels like that all of their drones were kind of around the same sort of price, didn't it? You know, when you were looking for the Air and the Air 2S and the Mavic 2, they're all around the £1,000. So maybe they're trying to push this towards the top end and almost take the place of the Inspire 2, almost. So it does make you think, well, are they either going to retire the Inspire or are they working on this next drone that's going to be, you know, 4,000 to 8,000 or something? You know, that's kind of how I would say it would fit in. Adam, what do you reckon?
Well, that's, it's interesting because obviously the base Inspire model, the Inspire 2, you know, without all the, you know, extra gubbins, was about £4,000. Obviously you did have to buy the cameras, the lenses, etc. So, you know, straight away you've got an all-in-one product here that's circa £4,000 with everything built into it. So yeah, it'd be interesting whether if they do release an Inspire 3 or a brand new model, whether it'll be round about £4,000, but then you have to pay, you know, another £5,000 to actually get the thing in the sky with a camera.
Sorry, Matthew.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we speculated about previously, and it seems to have come to reality, is that this aircraft is almost creating a new category. To me it bridges the gap between the Mavic series as we've known it before and the Inspire series. It sort of sits right in the middle, and for me personally, I would say in effect the Mavic 2 Pro has sort of been superseded already by the Air 2S in terms of what I would imagine DJI's vision to be. So I think for the sort of prosumer user who was buying Mavic 2 Pro, when the Mavic 2 is discontinued, or now that it has been discontinued, they'll be looking more towards that. And Air 2S is still extremely capable, an incredible little machine. And the Mavic 3 will be that next step up into the professional realm. So I don't think we should really be comparing Mavic 3 to Mavic 2 Pro, although it is a logical comparison. I think in reality, in the way that the market's going to respond to it, we're looking at two different animals here.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think there's going to be a big kind of restructure, I imagine, once all of these aircraft have kind of been released and updated. You know, there's going to be, again, I've actually just forgotten about the sort of the Matrice. So again, I don't know what will happen there. That's that exists at the moment. So there's obviously the Matrice. Then there's obviously the Inspire, which will be sort of grouped together with that. Then, yeah, we've got the Mavic 3 and then the smaller aircraft. So it does work quite nicely, I think, as long as they bring out the sort of the very professional stuff and sort of again sort of update those models as well, I suppose, too, which I guess we'll be waiting for and probably talking about next year or years to come. I don't know yet, but yeah, that's it. So I wonder now, obviously we have briefly spoken about this, you know, who is this aircraft kind of aimed at then, I wonder? So obviously we talked about professionals, and I think that's true. It's nice that this aircraft kind of is just in one small little box, isn't it, I imagine, compared to the Inspire, because that was a huge, great box with, you know, all the batteries and the charging case and the two controllers. It was a heavy thing to lug around, as me and Adam can definitely agree with that, I think. So this is great to start with. It can, you know, drop in your hand luggage, I suppose, really, which is perfect. One thing that we were talking about, and I'm not sure if we ever kind of got to the correct conclusion or a conclusion at all, actually, is whether it enables you to have a camera operator, because that would set it apart from it being super professional, because that really does unlock quite a useful sort of way of filming, doesn't it, having the second operator. So Matthew, did you ever kind of get to the sort of the results from that kind of idea or not?
Well, to be honest, Yeah, to be honest, I had a read of the manual, and it doesn't seem to go into that level of depth at this stage. The information that's published isn't absolutely clear to me as to whether that's possible or not. I think it's logical to say that it will be possible to connect a second controller and have some functionality of the camera. But of course, with the design of the Mavic series, you wouldn't be able to turn the camera around 360-degree axis on the aircraft itself anyway. So in a sense, the pilot would still be doing the yaw motion to a certain extent. So it's going to be interesting to see what's possible. I think that's definitely a clear defining difference between the Inspire series and the Mavic series for sure. So I can't give a solid answer there, unfortunately.
No, that's it. Yeah. And the one thing that we do know is that the Pro controller that we'll kind of come onto a bit later on does have an HDMI out as well. So that's obviously quite useful, very similar to the Inspire 2. And I don't think the Mavic series has had that before, if I'm correct. I want to say I'm correct, but everyone's looking like they're not sure either.
I'm
trying to imagine the connectors. And I don't, I'm fairly certain the standard controller doesn't.
No,
it's got HDMI, I'm sure.
Yeah, again. So again, that's probably a step up then, I suppose, too, isn't it? That's a nice addition to have. If you've got a client next to you, you can have a long HDMI onto a, you know, iPad with a tripod and stuff. That's a nice way of working. Yeah. So I guess that's kind of a benefit, I would say, definitely. So that's good. Obviously, image quality is going to be incredible with this aircraft, both for the video side of things and the stills. We'll get onto the actual physical specs of that with Adam a little bit later on. But we obviously know it's going to be a big step up. And obviously, they're using Apple ProRes as well with all their sort of latest drones now as well, which is great too. So that's good. And like we've sort of said before with the Mavic, it kind of starts to become an industry standard, I think, really, doesn't it? You know, this drone will, in years to come, I guess, be kind of the baseline, a bit like the Mavic 2 was, I think, as well, really, which is good. And great for people who are trying to invest in the latest technology, because, again, the Mavic 2 lasted for a good 2 or 3 years, didn't it? So I guess same again for this aircraft, and maybe even further into the future, like the Inspire 2, for sure. One of the biggest things, though, to remember is obviously with the older aircraft, when they stopped selling them, I don't know whether they stopped producing batteries at the same time, but they, you know, you kind of know that's going to start to happen. So I think that's the kind of the way of limiting how long you can use your aircraft for is how long you can get the batteries for as well, which is a bit of a shame. And yeah, kind of makes you remember how useful it was when aircraft took any type of battery, because you could buy them off the shelf really easily. But no, these bespoke ones are a little bit trickier now as well. So yeah, I guess we'll see how that works and see how long the Mavic 2 lasts for as well. So I think that quite nicely takes us to the next section of the podcast. So we're actually going to have a look at or talk about even the three different models, I suppose, really, and have a look at some of the specs and kind of maybe which one should you go for if you were looking for this type of aircraft. So I think I'll hand over to Adam. He's our cameraman. So we'll start talking about the specs of the camera and the different models, Adam.
Yes. Yeah, so first, we'll just kind of quickly touch on the Mavic 3, the Cine model. There's nothing really new here that we didn't talk about on the previous podcast, the kind of our, you know, rumor roundup, as it were, on it.
Yes.
But just to confirm, yeah, we've already mentioned it's capable of shooting Apple ProRes HQ, which I think is incredible. Bit of a shame it can't shoot RAW, but that's a very niche market that needs to shoot RAW. So yeah, ProRes HQ, footage of up to 5.1K. So it's quite nice, actually, being that 5.1K. It means that actually if you are shooting for 4K, actually, you've got a little bit of wiggle room there to crop in a bit. So, you know, if you do need to punch in without losing quality, you could shoot at that 5.1K and then punch in a little bit. You could even do a little kind of bit of digital zoom in there to make it look as though you're actually a bit closer. So that's quite nice. And that's up to 50 frames a second. So again, you can do that nice slow motion if you do want to scale that down. The Cine model has a 1 terabyte built-in SSD. Again, this is something that was leaked, you know, weeks ago. So nothing new there. It's got a light, I think it's called Lightspeed, if I remember reading that correctly. They called it Lightspeed.
That's right,
download link. Was it 5.1 gigabits per second? Something like that. It's something pretty darn quick. Again, you're going to need to make sure you've got a drive that can write that fast enough as well as read it fast enough. So it's going to be high end computers that are probably going to be able to cope with that. But it's great that it's in there. Again, a bit of a shame, I think, that it's built in. As I said on the previous podcast, I personally would rather have a replaceable SSD rather than one that's built into it, because if anything happens to that SSD, your aircraft wiped out, whereas I'd rather be able to hot swap out a drive. That's a big bugbear for me still. Sorry, Tom, you think you were wanting...
Yeah, is that the only... Again, I probably should have looked myself, but is that the only option? So it is just the built-in SSD and that's it? It doesn't take a card or anything else on top of that?
So it does take micro SD cards. So I think if you're shooting H.264, H.265 and still images, you can still shoot to micro SD cards. So that's still great. They've still got that functionality built in. But it's this shooting ProRes. If you want to shoot ProRes HQ, you need to shoot onto the internal SSD. Again, that bugs me a little bit that they couldn't have made that an external drive, even if it's a proprietary one that you had to pay £5 a gigabyte, as it were. As I think it's a pound a gigabyte on the Inspire 2, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I can think of a couple of reasons why DJI would not like to have that happen, but it would make perfect sense to be able to slot the same SSD in that you use in the Inspire 2, have the same slot, jam it in and off you go.
Yeah, this actually really bugs me actually about sort of the way things are going out. You touched about it on the batteries as well, the fact that we're limited by the manufacturers making these parts until the end of the life. It's actually, they've put a fixed shelf life on, especially as we're having COP26 now, talking about climate change and how we're going to reduce waste. Actually, we've still got big companies like this, and we're all doing it. We're all here buying new aircraft every 2-3 years. But it's because the manufacturers are literally limiting us to a lifespan of about 5 years because of getting parts. But that's just my 2 pence thrown in for that. So moving on to the Mavic 3, that can shoot 4K, 125 frames per second with 20 megapixel still images. The Cine model can do that as well, but obviously that shoots that ProRes HQ as well. But if you've just gone for the standard model, you can shoot 4K, 120 frames per second, 20 megapixel still images. Bit of a shame, I think it's only 20 megapixels. I would have liked to have seen a few more in there. That's not much over the Mavic 2. So actually, I would say if you're a photographer and you've got the Mavic 2 Pro, is it worth the investment to get the Mavic 3? You're not getting any more megapixels. Yes, you might be getting a bit more dynamic range. But in terms of still photography, I don't think it's a big step up. Video, yes. Photography, personally, no. And then we come on to that second camera they've called it hybrid zoom, up to 28 times. It equates to roughly 162 millimeter lens, so a hefty zoom lens if you had a physical zoom lens at f4.4. But I'd like to see some more footage on that. They've got some nice images on their promotional on the website. But really, I'd like to see that in some downloadable real-world scenario. A dark grey day in the UK. How's that going to look at 162mm on this Zoom camera? I think it's a little bit of a gimmick, personally, if it's aimed at professional photographers and videographers. I don't think a lot of people will use it for that. It'd be nice to see what you guys think of the practicalities of that Zoom camera.
I did have a look at that, Adam, and I think what was quite interesting is that DJI pitched that one of their pitches was that you could use it to save time in your flight and basically sort of have a look at what a shot would look like before flying the aircraft out into that position. And as you're saying, that sounds a bit gimmicky to me. That's almost a bit of a backpedal in a sort of a marketing exercise to make the camera sound more capable than it is, just so that people fully understand. I think just about everybody that's listening to this will have seen the pictures, but so that people fully understand, the two cameras are both integrated into the same sort of housing and mount, hanging off the same gimbal. So we're not talking about two totally independent cameras, but of course they function independently on the drone as well.
Yeah. I personally think it's a big step up purely because it was either one or the other, wasn't it, with the Mavic 2? You either had the decent sensor or the zoom, and it's like, that's annoying because it is sometimes quite good to have a drone that can do some great video, some great photography, and then quickly go and inspect someone's phone mast or, you know, TV aerial, I suppose. So it kind of gives you a few different angles to explore. But obviously, yeah, it all depends on how good the zoom actually is. But remembering the Mavic 2 zoom, that wasn't a massive like, oh my God, this is amazing. So hopefully this is a better zoom than that. So, you know, I guess it is sort of another improvement, I suppose. You don't need two aircraft. You just pay almost the same as much, you know, for the price though, maybe, I don't know. But they'll get their money one way or the other, won't they? So that's it. Yeah, so that's kind of the information about sort of the camera side of things. So let's speak to Matthew about kind of the other statistics. So first of all, the flight time seems pretty unreal, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So we spoke about this once before, and the sort of speculated flight time is the same as what DJI have published. So they're talking about 46 minutes of flight time, which is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the battery technology has come so far in such a short space of time. In reality, I think we'll probably see something closer to the 40-minute mark in sort of true flight time, because, of course, this is always in very controlled conditions, and they fly them literally to 0%, and the aircraft probably drops on the floor and dies, I would say, just about at the end of that 46 minutes. But in reality, though, it is still a big jump forward from what we're getting from other aircraft. I think the next one in line is the Air 2S, if I'm not mistaken, and I think that was quoted around 32 minutes or something like that. So either way, it's going to be a big jump forward. Whether it really is 40 or 42 or 46 minutes, it's still going to be incredible flight time. So that is absolutely phenomenal. They've got 5,000 milliamp batteries squeezed into this new generation of the Mavic, where previously it was under 4,000 milliamps. So that's where it's coming from. They squeezed more capacity in. I don't think it's revolutionary technology, but they're just squeezing every little bit in that they can now.
Yeah, exactly. I just had a quick look on the specs actually of the battery, and you're right, yeah, 5,000 milliamps. But interestingly, yeah, it's still a 4S. They call it a 4S battery, but I think it's slightly higher voltage like they've been doing. Mm. So I think normally the full voltage of a 4S is 16.8 volts, isn't it? Whereas this is saying 17.6. Yeah. So it's quite a jump up really with voltage. So obviously they're doing something with the cell voltages to push up the amount of power inside the battery. So yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? But still quite impressive.
Yeah, of course. Without geeking out too much, of course, by increasing the voltage for the same power, the current drops. And of course, that's the current is the energy flow, to put that into a simpler term, which means if there's less flow, we're using less energy. So yeah, that certainly is understandable how they've done it. But at the same time, it's incredible how far down that line they've got.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. And on top of that, they've also, again, I watched their little sort of announcement video, and it kind of showed this really nicely, the improved smart return to home as well, which looks really good. So not only does it know where to come back to, is it right that it kind of remembers the way it went and kind of can track its own little route back and stuff like that, Matthew? Is that correct?
Yeah, as far as I can understand, I'm not entirely certain on this, but of course the obstacle avoidance system has been improved. It's got sort of obstacle avoidance all around the aircraft. And I think what it's doing is, as it flies, it's mapping the area to a certain extent and holding that data. And then always knows where it is. So once it's out a couple hundred meters out, or however far out it may be, it's aware of any building structures, pylons, etc., that are between you and the aircraft. And if you use this improved smart return to home, it'll then navigate the most efficient route back to you. So I did read through the manual and try to get a better understanding of this. They don't go into that much detail about how it works, but they're certainly claiming quite incredible capability in terms of obstacle avoidance and the efficiency at which it's going to make its way back to you. If you do get your hands on one of these, you do need to understand those modes clearly and understand exactly what it's going to do, because in some modes, it'll control the height itself. Other modes, it will use the sort of more default settings that we're used to doing by sort of inputting a specific height that it'll go to and so on. So do take the time to read and understand and do some testing in a safe environment before you just put all your trust in that sort of system, I would suggest.
Adam, did you have something to say?
Yeah, it was just sort of, you know, about that. It'd be interesting to see whether, you know, we're always telling people on the flight test, you know, make sure you know, your return to home height is set to, you know, above the tree levels. And it'd be interesting to test. Yeah, obviously, as Matthew said, in a safe environment, whether, you know, it does recognize that, oh, actually, there's a, you know, there's a load of trees here that are at, you know, 30 meters, but am I return to home set to 20 meters? Does he know that? Oh, if I go, I know if I go up and over, does he know how to do that? Or if, you know, there's different heights, does it know, oh yeah, there's a more there's a section here or a building I need to know to go around that, or do I go up and over it? It'd be interesting to see to what degree it knows or it learns or, you know, programs in whatever however it's it. Done.
Yeah, I think, interestingly, the older models used to kind of start to say that was a thing, wasn't it? Rather than just flying dumb back, if it came across something, it would kind of go up 5 meters, have another quick go. If it was still limited, it would then go up another 5 meters and just keep trying until it could get over whatever was in the way. So obviously it's much better than that now. And I think it's probably using technology from, you know, the sort of the self-driving cars. It looks like it's kind of avoidance range has gone up from about 20 meters, which isn't much really, up to about 200 meters now, which is incredible, really. Yeah. So obviously it's going to start seeing a lot further ahead of it. And obviously it is building its own kind of idea of the world in whichever direction you've flown it. So yeah, I think it would be really quite cool to see that, wouldn't it? Almost try and get it lost and then press return to home and see if it could get back. And interestingly then, seeing if you could add something new into the mix and see if it would still dodge that. You know, there's quite a lot of stuff that would be quite interesting, but yeah, we might not be able to do that. But yeah, I guess maybe we'll wait until YouTube does, I suppose. But yeah, no, that's cool. I do like that side of it. You know, the more autonomous stuff is, the more hopefully we'll kind of get rid of any pilot errors or anything like that. You see, that's the idea, I suppose, isn't it? So I also saw on the video as well that it can active track much better, it seems, as well. So I think it's got some extra sort of clever software or tech on board to help it really navigate through trees and sort of track people on bikes and other things like that, because there were other drones that were starting to do that much better, weren't there? I think, like, was it the Skydio or something? There was a drone that had about cameras around it, and it was really nippy through all the trees. It was mental to watch it sort of catch people and track them, whereas Mavic's just kept knocking into the tree and crashing, I think. So hopefully they've improved upon that, and it sounds like they might have done that, and it's improved APAS apparently. So there you go. If you know what that means, then again, you'll be pleased, I suppose. It also looks like they might be releasing some features with software updates, I guess. Is do we know what those might be, do we think? Or
so, Tom, Matthew, yeah, to clarify that, it seems as though some of the functionality that they've already published, like this active track, is going to be improved and become available with firmware updates. So I think it probably already has the functionality, but I think the sort of claim to fame of the improvements may only come a little bit down the line for those that already have them in their possession. So I don't think there's anything revolutionary, but as you said, just improvements on existing systems that we're aware of.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing now, like we've talked about before. You know, they'll release all these great things and then, you know, little asterisk, you know, coming 2022 or something like that. You know, it seems to be the way, but at least you get them. You know, it's not just like you buy this drone and that's it. You know, there's more features coming, you know, every month or every year, and it's great because it kind of then evolves, doesn't it? Which is I think a good thing to be kind of able to do, I suppose, really, too. Again, we have briefly spoken about the specs, I suppose, and kind of the pricing, but also certain models come with certain sort of accessories and other bits and pieces too. So perhaps, Matthew, if you just talk us through the two different options for sort of the standard Mavic, I suppose. So, you know, what's the absolute cheapest price, and are there any other things that we can add on to increase the price? I'm sure there are.
Yeah, of course, Tom. These are sort of combo sets that I think we've become quite familiar with over the years. DJI have found a formula that seems to work well. So the basic model comes out with the sort of basic set, which includes the drone itself, of course, the standard controller, one battery, and then the normal accessories like a standard charger, etc. If you look at the Flymore combo, and this is still talking about the standard version of the Mavic 3, though, you then get the additional two batteries, charging hub, carry case, and an ND filter set. So that sort of mimics a lot what we've seen in previous generations of aircraft. But I think if we look at the Cine model, then obviously we've got quite a considerable difference on that. So, Adam, do you want to talk us through the Cine mode? There's something specific different about that.
Yeah, so the biggest difference is you get a different controller. Again, this is something we kind of looked at that has been leaked before and it has been confirmed. So you get what's called their Pro Controller, which is an integrated screen, which looks quite cool. And as we've kind of alluded to earlier, it's got HDMI out, which is great if you've got a client that you can do put to an external monitor. It comes with a few extra neutral density filters. Obviously, it's aimed at that more professional market that wants more ND filters. And but the Cine model seems to be you can only buy it as part of a combo, which I think is quite interesting. That you have to buy the Cine bundle, you know, with all the batteries, all the gubbins with it. So it's interesting. They aren't selling it as a separate model that you can get. You know, let's say again, I'll come back to that SSD. Your SSD fails. What do you do? I've now got to spend another £4,000 buying the combo kit again. Now, I don't need these ND filters. I've already got the ND filters. I've already got the control. I've got everything. Why can't I just get the base model? So that's, again, I hate that because you can't just replace it. You've got to spend excess money on stuff you won't need as a replacement. Unless they do change things up, or you know, maybe this is them going to encourage you to buy the DJI Refresh, so you can just get it replaced, you know, if something does fail. But it's like, well, if I didn't have that DJI Refresh, if I haven't actually double checked if they do have that, I would assume so. They seem to have it for everything else. You know, if you haven't got that, what do you do? You know, do you have to go out and fork out another £4,000 on the full kit again?
I think two takeaways from that, Adam. And the first one is, I think, again, it's confirmation that they're aiming this specific model at that professional user, because, of course, the professional user is going to use all of those accessories immediately. The day that they get it, they're going to want to have multiple batteries to be able to shoot all day. They're going to want all of those ND filters for the range of conditions they'll find themselves in, etc. So certainly that model is aimed at that market. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. And then going back to what you were just saying, I don't doubt that spare batteries and so on will become available, but I agree with you entirely. That SSD situation certainly sounds risky to me too. Perhaps DJI just have enough confidence in their systems, but I think we've all had that type of system fail at some point in time in different bits of kit.
Yeah, that's it. It's similar to laptops now, isn't it? You know, they're all built in. You can't replace the RAM. You can't change the hard drive. It's all just on one chip. And I guess that's kind of the downside of stuff progressing and getting smaller, I guess, but it's also annoying at the same time, I suppose, too, isn't it? Yeah. Adam, what do you want to say?
Well, it's interesting we sort of talk about, you know, the laptops going that way, but obviously globally now we've got this, we won't go into it too much, this right to repair. You know, there are countries now, including ourselves, that are talking about this right to repair. And, you know, if the SSD goes, can you replace that part? Are there going to be parts available for you to replace it? As you said, with the laptops, you know, we know that they're becoming all everything's soldered together. Are we going to see perhaps the next iteration? You know, a few years time, as governments introduce these right to repair laws, are we going to see us going back to, well, actually, yeah, it's all modular again. It's all you can replace these bits. Or manufacturers going to be forced to go back the other way? I know that's a complete. We could go on for a whole episode on that, but I just thought it's an interesting one that obviously we're accepting it, but actually it might go the other way.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, maybe we'll all end up having to have great big desktop computers again and huge great things. I don't know. I wonder if they can design stuff that can be fixed but also be small and modular as well. I guess. Yeah. Hopefully. I suppose we'll see, won't we, really? Cool. So I think that's everything covered, I think, really. And we've got to the end of our notes as well, which is always a good sign too. So I guess, really, closing thoughts, I suppose, really, for everyone. It kind of starts off with, is the future of drones here now? And I think it does seem to paint that picture, doesn't it? You know, something really small. Again, I always go back to the drones that I used to make, you know, probably a good 7 or 8 years ago now. And the specs are unheard of, really, aren't they, for the size of the aircraft and what it can do. I just looked at the control distance. I know this is totally irrelevant, but 30 kilometers, I mean, that's a massive distance, isn't it? It's just that technology alone is incredible, with, you know, aerials that are that big and stuff, and an HD picture as well. It's just, mental, really. I'm not going to start going on about in my day, it's, you know, because again, I think we all know, but it is incredible to see what really what professional companies can do with enough money. It is incredible to watch them design these aircraft, and for the flight times as well, it's great. But I think they've hit it out of the park. I think it's a good aircraft, and if I was in a position, it would be one of the contenders, I guess, really, for a professional, futuristic, future proof hopefully aircraft too. Matthew, do you sort of agree with me, or?
Yeah, certainly. I agree with everything you've just said, Tom. I think the developments over a relatively short space of time has been absolutely incredible. And I don't doubt that they will continue to develop, but it does feel a little bit somehow as though we're sort of plateauing, where we're sort of polishing an already almost perfect product. I think it'll be some time before something totally revolutionary comes around. Although, having said that, the camera that you guys reviewed recently sounds like leaps and bounds in that field. So perhaps they'll surprise us with something totally different in the future as well. For now, though, I think the Mavic 3 is set to sort of dominate this category for some time. I don't think they'll be replacing it anytime soon, because it certainly is cutting edge for sure. Can't wait to get my hands on one, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, we've still got to speak to Matt about that. He's gone very quiet, hasn't he, which is interesting. we'll have to see. Adam, I imagine you're probably similar as well with your thoughts.
Yeah, so I'd say if if you've got a Mavic 2 Pro or maybe even a Mavic 2 Zoom, you know, if you've had it, especially since day one, 3 years old now, it's certainly worth looking at, going for the Mavic 3 model. If you're a professional filmmaker, absolutely, if you go for the Cine model, it looks an absolute no-brainer. If you perhaps haven't got the Inspire, if you need a B camera for the Inspire 2, I should say. If you're still on the Inspire 1, then by all means, Christ, go out and buy one now. I'm looking forward to seeing practically the footage that you can get out of it. From what we've seen, it does look incredible. I'd be interested to see that in real-life scenarios.
Yeah, that's it, exactly right. Yeah, and if we've got people who are listening who are halfway through their GVC course and haven't done their OE yet, obviously you need to buy one so me and Matthew and the others can see one as quickly as possible. There we go. Can we say that? Yeah, we probably can, can't we? That's fine.
Tom, I've got a better idea. Let's get somebody who needs some flight training too.
Oh, that as well, actually. Yeah, that's good. And then we can get a proper hands-on with it then, can't we? Yeah. Obviously, COVID safe, I should say, as well. But there we go. So brilliant. So I think all that's left to say now is kind of the housekeeping bits and pieces. So thank you very much, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We've certainly enjoyed recording it. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast as well. It obviously helps the algorithms. Have a look at our YouTube channel as well. We've obviously got the video footage from the podcast on there too, so you can subscribe to that. And hopefully we'll start to sort of wind up the YouTube channel a little bit more as we sort of move towards Christmas and in the new year, I think, as well. That's the idea. So, I think that's everything from me. Anything to add, Adam, at all? Or?
No, that's all from me. I think I'm not on next week's episode. I'm off week, so just got you two to come up with something interesting to talk about, something techie.
That's it. Yeah, we've got it all planned out, haven't we, Matthew? We know exactly what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's scripted already.
That's it. Cool. So thanks very much, Adam. Nice to have you. Have a good week off next week. Matthew, anything to add, or just a goodbye, I should imagine?
Yeah, pretty much. It's been a bit of an information overload sifting through all the details on this aircraft today. So, looking forward to sort of letting it settle in and having a better idea of it over a period of time. But it's been a good episode. Thanks, guys.
Great. Cool. Okay, then. Well, again, like I said, thanks very much for listening. And we'll see you all again next week. Thanks a lot, everyone. See you later.